From ABC News, this is Perspective. This week's stories and why they matter. I'm Sherry Preston. The CDC tells those of us who are vaccinated we can ditch the masks inside. In India, though, the COVID crisis rages on.
India finds itself in this really delicate and dangerous situation of knowing what they have to do, but not being able to actually do it.
Violence mounts as the Israeli-Palestinian conflict intensifies.
Tensions between Jewish and Arab residents in these mixed towns really coming to the fore and bubbling up in a way that we have not seen since the Second Intifada 20 years ago.
And why so many other U.S. companies should be paying a lot more attention to the pipeline cyber attack this week.
It's amazing that the governments and the private companies have not been more proactive, and it's amazing that we've gotten to this point.
All ahead on Perspective. This was a busy week. That cyber attack on a major pipeline sent Americans racing to gas pumps in the southeast. And in the Middle East, the violence has just been getting worse and worse. We are not starting there, though. We're starting here in this country with a CDC announcement that fully vaccinated Americans can now stop wearing the masks. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky with the much-anticipated announcement this week.
If you are fully vaccinated, you can start doing the things that you had stopped doing because of the pandemic. We have all longed for this moment, when we can get back to some sense of normalcy.
How do fully vaccinated Americans feel about it? Well, why don't we let them tell you?
Are you ready to take it off?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, I've had enough.
I'm ready to rip it off.
I really enjoy just being able to make contact with people and just being able to see smiles.
I feel like a sense of freedom right now. Just to be able to walk around without masks and get a sense of fresh air, see people smiling again.
Thank God we're free. I can breathe again.
Some places will still require face coverings and social distancing inside as a precaution. But if you go to the CDC website, there's a list of everything that's now allowed if you're fully vaccinated. And if you are, pretty much everything is now allowed. Adolescents began getting shots this week thanks to FDA and CDC approval. Dr. Richard Besser, who heads up the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, called that decision huge.
The mental health impact, the anxiety, the depression, the idea that now with a vaccine, there are high school kids who could start the fall and have a normal high school experience, take off their masks, do sports, engage with their friends and not have to worry. I think that's absolutely huge.
One extra layer of protection with the Pfizer jab, Dr. Besser says, limiting the spread of those contagious variants.
Children can transmit this to older people, to relatives who may be at greater risk. And whenever the virus is transmitting, even between children, you have the opportunity for more variants to develop, variants that could escape the vaccine.
As we celebrate all this good news with COVID here in the U.S., in India, the outbreak remains out of control. The World Health Organization is designating the variant discovered in that country a global concern. Some think a million people in India may die by August, and only about 2% of the population has been vaccinated so far. ABC's Maggie Rooley and her team traveled to India this week to see what was happening on the ground. We were her last interview before she and her team left the country. From New Delhi, we spoke this week. What have you been seeing? Just how bad has it been?
I've heard words as like apocalyptic and chaos. And sometimes you can think news reports are sensationalized. But honestly, on the ground here, it is what it looks like on the news. It is just as horrific as people are saying. I mean, we just walking down the street, you walk past makeshift clinics on the side of the road, people that tell us they couldn't get into the hospital. They showed up with a loved one who was gasping for air, and the hospital just told them, there's no bed for you. People were scrambling to find oxygen, just to find anything to give their loved ones some relief. And a lot of organizations have been stepping up to provide that. But, you know, our very first day here, I'll never forget, we showed up to this roadside makeshift clinic. It was run by a Sikh organization. And there were just the people laying in cots on the side of the road with oxygen hooked up to them. And you could tell they needed more serious medical care than that, but this was the best they could do. And it's 100 degrees out. Volunteers that are there working around the clock to keep them alive. And everyone just kept saying to us, you know, our healthcare system has collapsed. It's not on the brink. It has collapsed right now. And this is the aftermath.
How do you stop that train that seems to be roaring out of control right now? We know vaccines, but vaccines are so far behind in India. And this is a country that is used to producing vaccines. That's the irony of all this.
Exactly. India's the world's leader in vaccine production. They are just a powerhouse, and they've actually been supplying a lot of the rest of the world with vaccines. But inside their own country, only about 3% are fully vaccinated. And so a lot of people are angry about that we talked to. I mean, people are saying they're trying to get vaccinated. They can't find these vaccines. But we know vaccines are the answer. We can practice all of the social distancing and mask wearing that we can. But the only way to actually save lives and bring down this outbreak and this spike is by vaccinating the population and sharing. It's not going to happen anytime soon. They're trying, but it is such a slow process. And sadly, India just doesn't have the time. Every day that vaccines aren't going out, more and more people are dying.
New Delhi is a city that is normally so vibrant, so full of people, so loud. One of the things that you have reported on is how quiet, eerily quiet the streets are. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Do you know what it's supposed to be like here? We've all seen the photos of the vibrancy and the energy and just people on people. And instead, it's just no one. I mean, every store is shut down and it's eerily quiet. People tell us they're afraid to go outside. One man said he hasn't let his kids outside of their rooms for 3 weeks. I mean, that is the level of fear that people have right now. But the other problem, though, Sherry, is that while so much of the city is quiet, it's impossible for some people to live in a lockdown. I mean, some neighborhoods, there's people living on top of other people. You cannot stay 6 feet apart. And also, you know, so many people in this country are living day to day with no government assistance. They can't lockdown. They can't not work. They have to feed their families. So while there are calls for this nationwide lockdown, it's more complicated than that. A lockdown can also kill lives. And so India finds itself in this really delicate and dangerous situation of knowing what they have to do, but not being able to actually do it.
And finally, Maggie, how are you and your crew holding up? Are you guys all masked? Are you guys all safe? How are things been going?
Everyone in our crew came from America fully vaccinated. And so you do feel safe and you feel blessed and lucky because, you know, how many people in this country are trying to get vaccinated, and it gives you this sense of protection. But there's still so much we don't know about this variant. And we've talked to multiple doctors that tell us they were fully vaccinated and they got COVID. And so it reminds you of how contagious this virus is, how serious it is. But they also reminded us that vaccines help. And, you know, a big stat that just came out was that so far any doctor that's been fully vaccinated has not died yet in this second wave. So they say to people, still get vaccinated. So people are encouraging vaccinations. I feel very lucky to be here fully vaccinated. We've been double masked. We've only been shooting outdoors. So the only place I've been inside in my entire time in India is our hotel room. That's it. We've at least had half a dozen, if not more, of our crew members have to leave in the middle of our shoots because either they tested positive for COVID, a loved one tested positive for COVID, or they got too scared to go outside. I mean, everyone either has tested positive for COVID or has a loved one that's tested positive. You cannot escape it here in India right now.
ABC's Maggie Rooley, who's been on the ground in India as this surge of COVID cases and this wave continues. Thank you so much, Maggie.
Thanks, Sherry.
For the first time in nearly 7 years, gas prices across the country are averaging more than $3 a gallon. The reason, of course, that cyber attack that led to a buying panic. By midweek, stations in four southeast states were running out of gas, some of them closing completely. Drivers waited in long lines and were getting anxious.
This is the third gas station I've stopped at to try to get gas, and this one only has premium, so I'm here.
I was a little nervous because I only had half a tank, so I was like, I know it's going to get busy, obviously.
Usually I'm the type of person that waits until it tanks all the way on E before I get my gas filled, but today, about a quarter of a tank, I'm topped off now. Before I get stuck.
The victim of the attack was the Colonial Pipeline. It stretches from Houston, Texas, all the way up through Linden, New Jersey. So what exactly took this very important company offline? And how prepared are we for similar attacks? No one better to answer those questions than our ABC News chief investigative reporter, Josh Bargolin. So Josh, where are we? Where are things now when it comes to the hacking of this pipeline?
What has happened here seems to be, from the best information that we can put together, this dark side group, which is a strange affiliation of hacking cyber criminals based in Russia and other Eastern European locations, they have this self-styled Robin Hood identity where they only go after wealthy companies. They claim that they don't want to hurt individuals. They don't go after nonprofits. They don't go after hospitals. They do a fairly sophisticated type of double ransomware attack. They go after you with a blackmail scheme. And apparently sometime over the last number of days or weeks, they got into the Colonial Pipeline system, not the operations of the pipeline. So to put it in real world terms, it's basically everybody's desktop computer programs that they run, running the business side, as opposed to the kinds of computer programs that open up the valves for the petroleum products to be spewed out onto a highway. It wasn't even a matter of closing it down. The threat is basically, we're in your system and we are now stealing or have stolen all of your corporate records. We are first going to keep them and we may put them out on the internet for everybody to see it. Also, what they then do, the double ransomware side comes in, where what they do is they say, even though we stole all of your stuff, we're not going to let you have access to your stuff because we are going to lock down your systems with sophisticated encryption. That's the double ransomware. And their point is you have to pay us millions in order for us to A, let you back into your systems, and B, not put all of your sensitive private data onto the internet. Think back to everybody's experience in Y2K or everybody's experience, even at home, when you get a virus on your computer, how complicated it becomes. We're talking about a mega company and how hard it is to go through all of the nooks and crannies throughout their system to see what's been breached, what's been damaged.
That explains it really well, Josh, because I think there's a lot of people out there who are thinking that the hackers are the reason all the gas stopped. And it really was the company that said, we're doing this proactively so that we have to make sure the gas really doesn't stop.
100%. There's a combination of all those different things. The first thing, they shut it down. They have to then find out, is the pipeline damaged? Because if the pipeline or the operating system is compromised and they continue to run it, that could be, God only knows, a week or two or 10 where the pipeline might have to actually be shut down.
I would think that literally every company in the United States, not just the infrastructure companies that matter, that get energy from one place to another, but every company would be thinking after this, oh dear, we have to fix this. We can't let this happen to us. How many of them are prepared?
There are all sorts of estimates about how these companies are not prepared. We know this incident with Colonial Pipeline occurred in the last couple of weeks. So we know that it came after a small water system in Florida was hacked on Super Bowl weekend, potentially endangering the public with a water poisoning problem. Back around the start of the year, they had detected the SolarWinds hack. They had found that this series of programs that is run and operated by a whole host of companies and government agencies had been infiltrated by the Russian government for 9 months before anybody realized that it had been breached. It's amazing to think that as we sit here coming in the middle of May in 2021, after all of these hacks, after 2014 with the Sony hack, that all of these companies have not hardened their systems. There's all sorts of software and network fixes that are out there. And some companies are better than others. For instance, the banking sector, as I understand it, has progressively hardened and hardened and hardened their systems. But when you look at a company like Colonial Pipeline or even any one of the companies that our listeners are thinking about right now, companies where people work, we're talking about critical infrastructure. Look, we've seen a number of ransomware attacks in the last few months where governments around the country have been held hostage by these cyber attackers. It's amazing that the governments and the private companies have not been more proactive, and it's amazing that we've gotten to this point.
Okay, that's Josh Margolin, Chief Investigative Reporter here at ABC News. Thanks, really good stuff. Thanks, Josh.
Hey, thanks, Sherry.
Moving to another issue of security, one that comes in the form of a huge annoyance: robocalls. In one of the latest versions, a phony federal drug agent tries to steal your money. The DEA is now warning the public about these imposters because they're convincing the vulnerable to part, collectively, with millions of dollars. ABC's Aaron Kotursky has the story.
Ordinarily, Darian Stuckey said he never would have answered the phone as he did that day last March at his home in North Carolina.
For some reason, I answered. I don't know why.
He picked up, even though he did not recognize the number.
It was a scammer pretending to be a DEA officer.
Stuckey did not realize right away it was a scam. The person on the phone seemed convincing and had troubling news.
He was telling me that my Social Security number was used for money laundering in the state of Texas. I've never been in the state of Texas in my life. So for something like this to just come up, it scared me.
Guy calls you up, says, I'm from the DEA, and your Social Security number's been used in money laundering. That's frightening.
It is. It is very is. And, you know, my heart started beating. I just panicked because I'm 19 years old. I got a good job. I just recently purchased the vehicle. Mind you now, I don't want to lose none of this.
Concerned he would lose his job or his car, Darian Stuckey listened as the supposed DEA agent told him to take his money out of the bank and put it elsewhere.
I had to put it on a prepaid card. I can't have no money, none of my accounts. I can't have no cash on me, being that a sheriff or officer was coming to my house, and if I had money on me, I would be a suspect of the money laundering. Now, mind you now, I don't want to lose my job or nothing like that. I don't want to get in no trouble.
Sure.
So I go ahead and do it.
Panicked and not quite thinking straight, he followed instructions.
It only was $190. And mind you now, I'm still not thinking that it's a scam. He tells me, he said, look on the back of the card, get peel the slip off, and give me the numbers. Still not thinking. So I give him the numbers, he's processing. As I'm waiting, something tells me to call my mother.
Did you start to sense something was wrong? Were you scared? What was it? What was going through your head at that time?
As he was talking, it's just that I calmed down. And that when I called my mother. If it wasn't for her, I probably would have lost way more money.
Stuckey conferenced in his mother to listen in on his conversation with the scammer.
And she told me, she said, hang up the phone. Because that's not the same person who tried to get me.
By then, it was too late. Darian Stuckey had become another victim of an imposter phone scam.
Scam calls and scammers in general are nothing really new.
Jamie Pokrifke is a real special agent with the Drug Enforcement Administration.
And we've received calls from all over the country, and it's basically the same call every time, where your Social Security number and your name have been used either to rent or purchase a vehicle that was found on the Texas and Mexico border containing drugs and evidence of money laundering. So then that's when this they tell them that they need to go remove that money and put it on a government secured card, which turns out to be a gift card. And just like Mr. Stuckey said, after they purchase that gift card, they're asked to provide the numbers from the gift card. And by that time, the money's gone.
Yeah, it all does happen very fast, doesn't it?
Yes, but some of the people that I've talked to have said they've spent almost hours on the phone because what will happen is they'll start to question it.
How you can say that this is a scam?
It's just the way about.
Like, how you can say that and how you can feel that this is a scam?
Pokrifke listened in to one of this scammer's intended victims. Listen to how persistent the fake DEA agent is in trying to convince his target he's legitimate.
Yeah,
go ahead. Tell me why they carry these gift cards. If this is a scam, then why are they giving these gift cards to you then?
You shouldn't be doing this. Hey, you know you're wrong.
You can also check me online. Do you want me to send you my badge picture right now?
They're giving out badge numbers. They're giving out case numbers. When they call you, they'll do a thing called spoofing their number, which is basically falsifying the info that's transmitted over to your caller ID. And they'll make it look like they're either calling from Washington, D.C., or a local area that they're in.
And to be clear, does the DEA call people up and say, your Social Security number has been used in money laundering, remove money from your account now?
No. If we would like to speak with you about something, we'll speak with you in person. We will never call you up on the phone. We will never threaten you.
Authorities are working to crack down on imposter phone scams after the Federal Trade Commission said they and other kinds of phone scams doubled in 2020 from the prior year. Darian Stuckey in North Carolina lost $190, part of the $1 billion in losses these scams cause.
I just don't want nobody else to go through what I went through.
I don't blame you. It sounds awful.
I'm telling y'all, like, you know, I got scammed. I'm not lying to y'all. I got proof, but still wasn't able to get the money back.
Reporting for Perspective, I'm Aaron Kotursky, ABC News, New York.
Coming up, violence in the Middle East. We'll tell you why this time it feels even worse on Perspective after this.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
From ABC News, this is Perspective. This week's stories and why they matter. I'm Sherry Preston. Coming up, why food packaging will soon be changing to reflect another major allergen. But first, for the past several weeks, tensions have been escalating between Israel and the Palestinians. They began with the threat of evictions, Palestinians from land that Jewish settlers had been told would be theirs. The violence has only intensified and has gotten worse, the worst since 2014, actually. Israeli airstrikes leveling buildings in Gaza. More than 1,000 rockets fired from Gaza toward Israeli cities, including Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. But it's on the ground, too. Mobs, those on both sides, pulling people from their cars and beating them. Why does this time, with all the violence we've seen in the Middle East in the past, feel different, more serious? According to correspondent Matt Gutman, who's in the region, there are lots of fires, he says, and no extinguisher in sight.
Residents increasingly angry.
We cannot continue to live like this. Do you understand that a person died here?
Opening up another front for Israel, Palestinians with Israeli citizenship, rioting in multiple towns, protesting their status as second-class citizens. Hundreds wounded. There is conflict on multiple fronts, Israel versus the Palestinians. The Palestinian Israelis against the Israelis. This is stuff we haven't seen. There is conflict here on so many fronts. The only thing I can tell you right now is it does not seem close to being over.
ABC's Jordana Miller is our correspondent in Jerusalem. We spoke this week. Jordana, you have been in the Middle East for a long time. Is this latest escalation of hostilities the worst you've seen? Compare it to what you've seen in the past there.
This is definitely the worst round of violence since the 2014 Gaza war, which lasted 50 days. We're seeing the Israeli army carry out very intense bombing raids equivalent to the ones they carried out during that war. They're going after high-rise buildings where they believe Hamas military headquarters were housed and others. They're going after the homes of Hamas leaders. They're going after leaders themselves doing targeted assassinations. That's one of the things to note is just how quickly this has escalated. On the other side, here in Israel, we have never seen the kind of intensity of rocket barrages. It's a testament to how equipped Hamas, how many rockets they've been able to produce either on their own or with the help of Iran.
Tell us a little bit about why this is going on and why it's going on now in particular.
There were a lot of pressure points building for weeks. It began really a month ago when Ramadan started. Israel made a decision to barricade a very iconic plaza that's used for for Muslims to gather and even pray during the holiday. Then there was a very controversial court eviction handed out to Arab residents who live in an East Jerusalem neighborhood. They may, after decades, have to move out because Israeli Jews are claiming the buildings were owned by Jews before the State of Israel. A very controversial case. The Supreme Court is set to rule on the family's appeal. Nonetheless, it's fueling anger on the Palestinian street that they're somehow being pushed out of East Jerusalem, which is, of course, what they want for their future capital. The Palestinian elections were canceled. That was blamed partly on Israel, even though that is not really the main reason. They were canceled because the Palestinian Authority feared Hamas would make major gains. We see that Hamas has jumped in to a conflict that began in Jerusalem at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Partly, it's becoming clear that they want to show the Palestinian people that they are the ones who represent their true aspirations, that may not resonate with Palestinians on the street, but that's what they're trying to do. And they're trying to push the Palestinian issue back into the center stage because it has been, you know, on the back burner really since President Donald Trump left office.
We have seen violence of a kind that we haven't seen in quite some time. You're a new mom. Your thoughts on that and living in the region and how you feel as a mom in the region. I'm really curious, Jordana.
These protests, or not protests, clashes really, tensions between Jewish and Arab residents in these mixed towns coming to the fore and bubbling up in a way that we have not seen since the Second Intifada 20 years ago. And it goes really both ways. I mean, we saw an Arab mob try to, you know, beat up a Jewish driver in the city of Akko. And then we saw a Jewish mob try to beat up an Arab driver in the city of Bat Yam. This is being condemned by the prime minister, and the president, in a plea to Israelis on all sides, got on the phone to talk to the nation, as you know, so many cities were in civil unrest. When this cycle of violence ends in Gaza, it's something that Israel is going to have to go back and really look at, because they have vastly underestimated how unhappy Israeli Arabs are, that there still is discrimination against them, and on the other side, that there are some also hatred towards Israelis.
ABC's Jordana Miller, listen, thank you so much. Good luck, stay safe, and excellent reporting as usual. Thanks, Jordana.
Thanks, Cherry.
May is National Allergy Awareness Month, and to mark it, President Biden recently signed something called the FASTER Act. It'll change the way that foods are labeled, and it had the support of both political parties for a change. ABC News producer Jenny Goldstein reports on what it means for people in this country who are allergic to sesame.
24-year-old Brooke Smallson from Los Angeles is just one of 32 million Americans who live with potentially life-threatening food allergies.
I'm actually only allergic to sesame seeds. I'm not allergic to sesame oil, which is actually kind of a blessing because sesame oil is a lot harder to detect.
There are 1.5 million people across the country who, just like Brooke, are allergic to sesame, and they've gotten help in pushing the FDA to recognize it as a common allergy from Lisa Gable. She's the CEO of the group Food Allergy Research and Education, also known as FAIR.
We find solutions and therapies and diagnostics and meet the needs of people with life-threatening food allergies.
There are many different types of food allergies, 8 of which were recognized by the FDA as the most common in the U.S. But Gable says FAIR believes there really should be 9.
Milk, egg, peanut, soy, wheat, tree nut, shellfish, fish, and sesame.
The move for the FDA to recognize sesame as a common allergen was an important goal for FAIR. Achieving it means the FDA must require plain language labeling when sesame is used. A lot of people don't realize that when a food label reads natural flavors or natural spices, that can often mean sesame, and that can be very dangerous for people like Brooke. Smallson has experienced this many times throughout her life. One time, she ate French fries at a deli that triggered an allergic reaction.
The French fries had a Mediterranean seasoning on them.
She says there's a real need for clear labeling.
If it had been listed somewhere along with the caution contains wheat, eggs, dairy, if it was in one of those things right away, like jumping off the page, it wouldn't have become such a stressful situation.
In early March, FAIR's Food Allergy Safety Treatment Education and Research Act, also known as the FASTER Act, was unanimously passed in the Senate, and a month later it was passed in the House. On April 23rd, President Biden signed it into law, but it won't take effect until the start of 2023, which means that for the next 2 years, labeling still won't be mandated. Smallson says doing so would be especially helpful for those who are also allergic to sesame oil, because you can't see it as easily as the seed.
Sesame seeds, I can usually see them if they're on top of something like as a garnish or if they're mixed in.
Gable agrees that the need for correct labeling is more important than ever. Food allergies are actually becoming more and more common. After the late 90s, the U.S. began experiencing a major increase.
You really find it rare to find people with multiple food allergies before 1998, the late 90s. And all of a sudden, we started seeing the disease rise with children. And now, recently, we are seeing more and more adults who've eaten something their entire life, and yet they've developed anaphylaxis due to eating that food.
Fair hopes that talking about the issue will spread knowledge and awareness about the FASTER Act and the importance of labeling sesame on packaged foods. The group also just wrapped up Food Allergy Awareness Week, and they've also implemented an allergy alert and ingredient notice to provide real-time information on mislabeled and recalled foods.
When we are contacted and told that there was an accident made in the production process of a consumer product good, of a food that's sold in a package, then we immediately put that alert out. And I'll tell you that those alerts are the highest watched and read social media engagement that we have.
With the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine, we've heard concerns from the allergy community about allergic reactions to the shot. But Gable says doctors have not seen many issues with food allergy patients taking the vaccine.
What our doctors are saying is that you're better off taking the vaccine if you can in your doctor's office. However, they are not really seeing a great deal of risk associated with it.
She does suggest, however, that patients consult with medical professionals about any specific conditions ahead of their vaccine appointments. In the meantime, Brooke and those with sesame allergies like her will be counting down the days until the FASTER Act takes effect in 2023.
Recognizing that it is a common allergen might get more people recognizing that as well and kind of increase awareness.
Reporting for Perspective, I'm Jenny Goldstein, ABC News.
Around the world, more than 3 million people have died of COVID-19. And even though we got some good news this week in the United States, we have still lost nearly 600,000 people in this country. At a hospital in Southern California, they held a memorial this week for all their patients who had lost their fight with the coronavirus. But the gathering was also for all the doctors, nurses, and support staff who helped care for them. Many of those frontliners are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder because of all they've been through in the past 14 months. ABC's Alex Stone attended the ceremony at Providence St. Jude Hospital.
You raise me up so I can stand on mountains.
Under the orange glow of a Southern California evening, the doctors and nurses at Providence St. Jude Hospital stand in their blue scrubs and white coats holding tiny white boxes. In those boxes, butterflies representing all of the victims of COVID who have died at this hospital in the past year.
May the spirit of the butterflies and the spirit of our loved ones take flight amongst us.
All at once, the white boxes were opened and 200 butterflies lifted into the air. For a year, these frontline workers have not been able to take a moment to breathe. They're exhausted. Now with COVID numbers finally coming down, they're taking that moment to mourn all of the lives lost. Some are dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder and other anxieties. Part of that healing is this ceremony.
This ceremony is something we've never done before, but it seems appropriate to mark the end, hopefully, of an unprecedented year. When you work in healthcare, you're familiar with loss, but the suffering experienced last year by families, friends, and healthcare professionals was beyond anything we could have imagined.
Among those family members coming back to say thank you is Patty Trejo. Her husband died here in March.
He said how he saw the stress on the nurses and the physicians. He got admitted at 10:30. He said by 2 o'clock, the hallways were full of patients and his heart was melting. He goes, I feel so bad for the families and for the nurses and the doctors. only the doctors, he said just the staff in general, running around.
Her husband was here during the height at Providence St. Jude in February. The hospital was overflowing. In the past year, among those who came in, Rick Moran, who works for the hospital, and his wife, they got COVID. His wife never left. She died here.
She was very loving. She is a woman of faith. All her patients loved her. All her coworkers loved her. Just like, since she's been gone, it's not been the same at her facility. She's touched a lot of people. A lot of people. With her prayers.
And like so many hospitals, executives here are trying to figure out how to make sure the mental health of its staff is solid. To make sure, now that things are calmer, that staff members can take a moment and reflect. Hospital CEO Brian Hohen.
We were quite exhausted, and we talked with our staff, and we never knew the difference between being tired and fatigued. Now they do, and that is just something that we looked forward to, getting to a place where we could let people have vacation and just be home with their families and take time away. We had some people who worked 20 plus days in a row.
In the rising and setting of the sun, we will remember them. In the opening of new buds and the rebirth of spring, we will remember them.
In this moment, as the butterflies take to the sky, the tearful staff here remember those patients who they had to say goodbye to.
With this symbolic gesture, we honor those who have left us and encourage those left behind to have hope and know that our loving God is always with us, even in the darkest of days.
Reporting for Perspective, I'm Alex Stone, ABC News at Providence St. Jude Hospital in Fullerton, California.
Finally, there are lots of incentives to get vaccinated against COVID. Seeing other people's smiles when you take off your mask, hugging and touching once again. But in Ohio, the incentive is cold, hard cash. Governor Mike DeWine announcing those who have gotten their shots will be entered into a lottery.
This announcement will occur each Wednesday for 5 weeks, and the winner each Wednesday will receive $1 million.
Well, that's a lot of money for one little jab. If you're fully vaccinated in Ohio and a teenager, you could be eligible for another midweek lottery. If they draw your name for that, you'd win a full ride to one of the state's public universities.
Each time, randomly selecting one student to receive the full 4-year scholarship.
Is this kind of like a bribe? Absolutely, says ABC News medical contributor Dr. Yvonne Maldonado, but who cares?
I think every state, every county has to do what it can to convince people that this is the right thing to do. We need to get more people vaccinated, and whatever it takes will work.
The money is coming from leftover COVID relief funds, the drawings to be held over the next 5 weeks. And to be eligible, you got to be at least 18 years old and an Ohio resident. So, sorry, no crossing state lines to try to hop on the Ohio vax bandwagon. We're looking at you, Indiana and Kentucky. Yeah, West Virginia and Pennsylvania, you stay home too. You're going to have to get your shots in your own states. From ABC News, this has been Perspective. Thanks for listening. If you want to listen to any of our past shows, you can subscribe to the Perspective podcast. Give us a review if you've got the time. Tell us what you like and what you'd like to hear in the future. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find Perspective and other ABC News shows at abcnewspodcasts.com. Perspective is produced by Eric Mollo. For ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.